Hey, welcome everybody. It is BNB Weekly. It is 20th of April. Always have to cheat. I just no idea what's today anymore. Is it Monday? It is Monday, actually.
It's a day.
It's a day.
It's always
Mondays nowadays. That's true as well. So welcome everybody for BNB Weekly, episode 80, 20th of April. And we do have a visitor today. But before we go there, just quick recap. BNB Weekly is all about Microsoft 365 news and community, let's say, articles and blog posts and what has happened within the last week. We always cover the previous week or mainly concentrate on the previous week. And then this one will be released on Tuesday. Well, technically, you see it when it's live, so it's not tomorrow. But we recorded that yesterday.
But you could be watching it on any other day.
That's true as well. So you never know what's actually going to happen.
This is one of the shows that doesn't expire.
Okay. My name is Justin Juvonen. I'm a program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint engineering team in Microsoft. And with me as a co-host is Waldek.
Hi, everybody. My name is Valdek Mastegat. I am head of product at Rancor. And today we have a guest, Katja Jokisalo. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you. And hi, everyone. So I'm Katja. I live in Kuopio, Finland, which is about 400 kilometers up north from Helsinki. And yes, we do still have snow up here.
Yeah. Seriously?
Yes.
Wow.
In the front yard, not in the backyard anymore. Somehow. I don't know why.
So the summer arrived front yard or summer arrived to backyard, but not yet to front yard.
Southern side of the house, and then the northern side of the house. That's how it works. So
South of the wall, there is snow, right?
Yes, that's in Finland. Yeah, on Helsinki, we actually did our snow record on this weekend. I think it was Friday, maybe, whatever. We had the highest amount of snow this winter in Helsinki, which is like, wow. It's April, mid-April, what the?
Total amount in April bigger than the whole year. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to put things in perspective, we didn't have a snow for the last give or take 3 years.
Yeah.
At all.
Slightly different. But Kuopio is 450 kilometers north from Helsinki, and you actually did have snow. How much snow did Kuopio get this year? Let's start from basics.
Not much. Not much. Very easy year. Yeah.
Yeah. But what is very easy year? For the international audience, because they are like listening.
A meter, 2 meters.
Exactly.
Easy one means that we only had to do the snow work like 3 times this year. Yeah. And normally you need to shovel your way out of the yard every single morning.
Yeah.
Wow.
What's the record? What's the record in your place? The most snow, is it 1 meter, 1.5 meters?
More than 1 meter, definitely.
Yeah. And that's pretty typical, probably in Kuopio. Now, anyway,
I were there, you wouldn't be able to see me, basically.
We haven't met for a while, so you shrink even when... No, never mind.
I age, and like everything else that ages shrinks, right?
Okay. Whatever you say. Now... Let's actually concentrate on the actual business. So, Katja, what do you actually do for a living? So right now you're obviously more staying at home, but are you working remotely? And what do you do for businesses across the world?
Yep, I work with a company called Sulava. We have about 120 professionals working all things Microsoft Cloud, so modern Microsoft stuff, and I focus on the area called modern work, which basically means all the Microsoft communication and collaboration applications. SharePoint, of course, Teams, a tiny bit of Yammer as well.
It's a year of Yammer, come on.
Yeah. I started with SharePoint 13 years ago, I think. And past 6 years, I've been mostly or mainly working in the cloud, and still with SharePoint, but also a lot of work is, of course, around Teams nowadays.
Yep, which makes a lot of sense. Before we started recording, you said that one of your specialties is the information architecture in the intranet designs. What does that mean, actually, for those who are not familiar what it means?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing because I think the intranet is like, how do you say it? Last fort, final frontier for the information architecture in the Microsoft world, because it's the place where we still have some kind of planned structure, maybe even mandatory metadata and so on. So this is the place where we try to group and create different contexts and have a clear navigation, a way to find content using the navigation and additional paths and metadata as well. So that's what we do when we plan the information architecture. We plan the navigation, we plan the structure, the physical and logical structure, and also the metadata in order to make it easier to understand the context and find and discover the content. But it's not only in the intranets, of course. We need to focus on the information architecture in the digital workplace as well. But in most cases, in Teams, it's much more like flexible or free based on the requirements of the team, what is the structure in the team. But intranet is some kind of common place where someone plans the navigation and structure and everyone else uses the same.
Now, on that one, I'm sorry, Waldeck, quick question. You kind of touched, yeah, exactly. You touched this slightly already, but why is information architecture important? Why would companies, why should they invest time on planning information architecture rather than come up with something random?
Or just let everybody do their
whatever
stuff
they want, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there are two main reasons. The first one, the obvious one, is of course that it makes easier to find the content and discover the content. So if you need to know something, you can navigate to it, you can search it, you can find it in many different ways if you have the proper information architecture. And it's also easy to use, like intuitive and logical to use if it has that planned architecture. But the second one is also important, and it's the kind of the governance part. If we have the proper structure planned there, we can kind of trust that, for example, items have the permissions they should. They are inherited from the, for example, site. So I think those are the two important parts. Why to include?
Yeah, that's actually, the permissions is a really important piece as well. So making sure that not the wrong people can edit things or access the things. And that's why it's important to figure out who's doing what where and what are the roles. Absolutely. Absolutely. So Waldeck, you had a question. Sorry, I don't want to.
Yes, I want to ask. Like, so you said that you've been doing this work for, or you've been working with intranets for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. How have you seen change the field of IA? Coming from there, from the typically many on-prem setups with hierarchical structures to what we see now in a cloud or cloud first, with everything is a site collection, we have hubs, we have teams. How do you see this change over the course of the years?
It's actually a very interesting question because, of course, there's a huge change in the way we do, for example, SharePoint intranet projects. We used to have those huge corporate intranets, which took 2 years to build and cost a lot of money.
Been there, done that.
Nowadays, and nowadays, you can basically go to Lookbook and provision an example, like template for your intranet in 5 minutes. So technically, it's completely different world. But I think the part where we actually plan the structure and the navigation, how to find the content, how to group the content together, it's very similar nowadays. Of course, we have different technical structures there, but the planning phase, planning work is very much the same still.
So technology and doesn't change the logical thinking, so to say. So.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, in a way, that makes sense, right? Because typically you would say that the way you structured content reflects you as a company, and that doesn't change because now you're online. Like, if you used to think in projects and programs and you have specific documents that have given names, like, that is still the case because that is the business you're in. Like, just because you used to have sites and now you work primarily in Teams, well, that doesn't change your business, right? So it might not make sense. I wanted to ask about something else. Forgot the question. Carry on.
But one very important difference nowadays is that we have different platforms for publishing and collaboration. Previously, you might have all your workspaces inside the intranet, like subsites of the intranet. But nowadays, you have to be very clear that this is our collaboration part. This is the Teams. Here we work together and prepare the content, and then we move it, we publish it to the intranet.
Which is an interesting discussion point. Yeah, discussion point as well. So are you seeing then the adoption of Teams being us heading more and more to the direction where the collaboration goes away from SharePoint and then happens in Teams? And what is the demand, what you see, in your customer cases?
Yeah, of course, definitely. I haven't had a project with SharePoint workspaces, like without Teams.
Yeah.
What do I say? 3 years now. Yeah. So when Teams came, it was immediately all in.
Yeah.
Well, but I guess it only proves the point, right? That when you collaborate, like there is the need to communicate, and doing that via email is not the most efficient way, right? Especially when you have alternative of Teams, where you have this persistent chat, if you like, and you can always go back to it, you can search to it, and you can also in the same place work together on files, documents, presentation, and so forth and so on. So I guess like it makes perfect sense to do it there in platform that shines in this, as opposed to like, try to like fit this square peg into the round hole of SharePoint, trying to converse in that space, right?
Exactly. And it's very easy and understandable like that way that, of course, we do the collaboration on Teams. But yeah. I sometimes have to explain why do we still need the SharePoint communication site, the pages.
And why is that? What is the answer for that one? So why would you actually do that?
We need them because they have the features, the functionality which we don't have on Teams. So if we want to create, for example, navigation, and we want to create multimedia content pages, we need to use SharePoint for that.
And that's actually, from a Microsoft perspective, that's definitely the way to go forward. And it's not like Teams is going to have its own multimedia or navigation elements. It is actually surfacing SharePoint rather in the Teams as the one of the applications to choose from.
But it's also an interesting thing, right? Because like if you talk to a non-technical person, to them, like they if you imagine, right? Imagine that you expose your intranet landing page as an Teams tab.
Yep.
To that non-technical person, their intranet will be Teams. Like they will have no reason to go anywhere else.
Yep.
So for them, they will have their, you know, they will be able to start their day and stick for the day in Teams. Yep. They don't need to go anywhere else because they have everything in single place. Whereas on technical side, we know, well, yes, but that page, these files, they don't actually live in Teams.
Yeah, but doesn't actually matter.
Yeah, for the end user, it doesn't
depend
matter.
To whom.
It's okay.
To whom, right?
But why does it matter for anybody, actually?
Well, if you are an architect, if you need to implement search, you have to know.
From a technical perspective, if you're responsible for technical implementation, sure, you need to understand what are the bits and pieces which are available to build the polished end-user experience, and then you basically surface that. Right now, in the Teams, is absolutely the right way to surface this thing. But outside of the technical people, why would people need to know?
Imagine that there is, like, we know on the technical side that O365 or Microsoft 365 comprise of different services. You come to Teams where you have exposed your SharePoint intranet and there is SharePoint outage. A user will go to, hey, my Teams intranet doesn't work. And they will submit a ticket. And admin is like, hey, but Teams works. So what do you mean? And they're like,
but that's again a technical person. Again, that's it. Yeah. Because when you think about even in an old school case, and we always go here because we're dinosaurs, whenever we were hosting stuff in on-premises, SQL server, SQL server, yes, exactly, we are, not you. But whenever the SQL server went down, everybody blamed SharePoint, which is completely understandable.
Well, because that is how they're saying,
exactly. Yep. So but from an end-user perspective, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but it matters for the content editor in SharePoint case because we don't have the same functionality on Teams yet. If you think about, for example, Planner, it doesn't really matter because you can do every single thing you can do in the Planner application, you can do it in Teams tab. Yeah. But with SharePoint, you cannot do it yet. So that's why we need to. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so if you would expose a SharePoint page as a Teams tab, can't you edit it in there in place?
Nope. Not for now. No.
So that makes sense.
How would I put this in a non-confusing way? There's an interesting discussion right now in my inbox waiting for debate on how do we and what do we support and everything. But we are looking into, so there's a certain group of feature PMs who are looking into making that experience more polished. Right now, it's not quite optimal. As an example, if you expose the SharePoint as a personal application, which you can do, right now, this might actually change in the upcoming even days or weeks. It is not supported to do that. And you will lose the top navigation. And you will lose the editing capabilities. So as a content editor, you would have to go to the SharePoint to create the news. But you can consume the information through the Teams, which, from my perspective, still is like, yeah, but that's precisely what we want. I don't see any problems of the content editors being or explaining to them that they need to go to the SharePoint to create the content. Well, what's your opinion, Katja, on how are you positioning this thing currently with your customers?
I would love to see the possibility to do some quick edits, change the contents of the page, maybe create a new page from Teams. But I agree that if we are doing something like more, like really building the structure or creating metadata and so on, it can very well happen in the SharePoint.
Yep. It doesn't need to be. Also, let me bring to that an argument against it, right? We just said that Teams is the collaboration space around content or documents. How would a news page or roll-up page be different than a document? Like a content editor still might need to collaborate.
In the long run, absolutely. But if you think about the organizational, if you think about companies, it is only a subset of people who are creating news. It's not everybody creates news. That's quite rare. So therefore, training 5 people to actually go to the SharePoint to create the news, and then other 99% of the people are consuming the news through the Teams, I think that's acceptable. So, but again, we can improve. And definitely we are improving in this area in the future. So.
Well, but I mean, it could be news, it could be other announcements, right? So as a across the company, depending on the size, depending on what kind of company, like media company might do more work in that space comparing to an, I don't know, IT company or something. So it's like, it depends a lot. You want to add something?
Yeah, that's an important thing from the information architecture perspective as well, because right now it makes it easier to explain to people that this information here in the intranet is published. You can trust it. It's the final version because you are in the different platform. But if it's tightly integrated in, if you are consuming it on Teams, how do you know? Is this the intranet content or is it something we are working on? Is this the draft marketing team just created? So
It is an interesting thing. It is an interesting thing. And I guess, on one hand, you would say, there is a need to have this final content where you say, okay, this is it. This is the fact. This is locked and sold. On the other hand, nowadays, the market, the world spins so fast that what was up to date today might be out of date tomorrow. So what is final? When final is final? And are we even at all in a place where we can lock things and say, okay, this is now done? Or this is just a V1 and then tomorrow might be
the V2. V1, exactly. I think it's all about the V1s and V2s and whatever. I don't think anything is ready anymore anywhere. It's the classic discussion.
Except tax. Tax is done.
What's that?
Like, what?
When you file tax, like every
tax,
year, you know?
Taxing.
Ah,
taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
When I file my tax, it's done.
That is true. That's fair. That is fair. But it's one of those classic discussions so when is as an example for you, Waldeck, when is a product ready to be shipped? Is it ready? Is it complete? Is it something
it's
now?
It's ready, but it's never finished.
Exactly.
It's ready, but it's never finished. Like that. Exactly. That is the thing, right? I mean, when at some point, you don't want to. It's illusion to say it will ever be finished, right? Because it's
but
every
you still
day.
Have the last published version.
True. Of course. You have a release. Absolutely. Like every time you say, okay, this is now available either as preview or publicly to everyone. And then tomorrow there will be new version and new version. And there's always the reality, especially in products, where not everybody might be on latest because they have no reason to, or they haven't,
they don't want to invest.
So it complicates things. Yeah. Well, that gives us a nice segue, or as you say it in Finnish, a donkey bridge.
Donkey bridge, yes.
Katja, you said that you're verging into code. Originally, you've been no code person, or you didn't develop, and now you are slowly verging into it, correct?
Not really. It's more like a corona time hobby, I would say.
No, but that's interesting as well.
Trying to learn to code. Yeah.
Why is that? What got you on the track of... You got so bored, you got nothing else to do?
No, but I think it was because I felt that I kind of, a couple of years ago, I still knew what's happening. But with SharePoint framework, I kind of dropped it out. I haven't been doing anything and I just wanted to catch up. I want to know the basics, even though I'm not doing it for a living.
And there's a good set of training materials for that, right? So,
yes.
Well, to tell you the truth,
setups and videos. But I think that I'm not a typical example of a person trying to learn to code because I have a pretty decent teacher here at home, so I don't really use the materials all by my own. Yeah.
Sure. You have an MCT living under the same roof, so Microsoft Certified Trainer. So. That's true as well. That is a good point.
Still, I'm interested. So how do you go about it first? And two, how do you experience it? So are you're trying to learn only SPFX or just M365 dev at all, meaning also things like identity and graph and everything around it?
I think I would like to start with SPFX. After that, we can widen, of course.
Of course.
But to be honest, even the basic setup, like all the gits and multiple amount of different groups and so on, it's a long way to get to that point where I actually need to start learning something else than SharePoint framework.
Yeah. Sure. And one of the challenges that people keep on having, for example, even with starting points of doing development for SPFX, is it for Teams or in SharePoint, is the fact that, like you said, you need to install a lot of that stuff. And then if you have this kind of a classic way of learning, you think about, okay, so I need to install this, so I need to learn this. So I need to understand what is Node, how does it work, what is a Gulf, and how does it work? Mm-hmm. And that's actually no, you shouldn't. That's a wrong detour to take, because then if you start trying to understand what is Gulf, you spend time on more on the irrelevant stuff. And sure, whenever you're a advanced developer in SPFX, you can have a look on the more detailed options, what you can do. But what's your opinion, Waldeck, on that?
I think in a way, it's the same as you use a car. If you buy a car, you're not starting with, okay, so a car has an engine. I have to know everything about the engine. No, you have the basics. You know, you put petrol in, diesel in, or it's an electric car. It has an engine. It drives. This is how you start it. When you get alert, like a red light or orange light, there's something wrong, like the basic things. But I don't need to be a mechanic to drive a car, at least today. Right. So I think the same analogy stands true for SPFX. Like, sure, there's tool chain. Like back in the days when we would build WSPs, not everybody knew MS Build. Like I would say like 9 out of 10 didn't, because not everybody needed to customize build. Like you would press F5, it would build. Perfect. I can do my job. Yeah. I think the same is here, but it's a new thing. It's like there's a big group of folks who are accustomed to web dev. And these folks know everything about NPM and Gulp and Grunt and Burp and Fart and so forth and so on.
This is a family show. Be careful.
It's just a word that is in
dictionary.
I look it up. There's also this other audience of .NET folks, like folks who are used to .NET development, who are like, what is this thing? And then there are folks who just start dev and they are overwhelmed because they don't have any experience at all. They might know JavaScript, they might know PHP, but then now in here, they're on a new toolchain and it's like, where do I start?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not easy to understand what do you really need to understand.
True.
What you can skip and what you need to learn.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
So only after you learned all of this, you know, oh, I could have skipped that.
Yeah, that's true as well.
I know it very well because many times in our study sessions, I kind of stuck with something, asking, why do you call it bundle and what does it really do? And then he's like, yeah, just type it. Let's continue. Yeah. Don't worry about it now.
Valid question, but it doesn't matter. So,
good. Now let me tell you, in 1984.
Since the Romans and the situation was that things happen for a reason.
Yeah.
Now, should we do some articles and then we can actually get back on the on the normal agenda? Let's do that.
Articles.
Yeah. Normal agenda. Articles are normal agenda. So, related on actually the dinosaurs, we wanted to start with something which is actually super important, but it's a good reminder that people need to start acting as well. There's quite a lot of customers still running SharePoint Server 2000, 2010, which is an older, it's more than a decade old already. We were planning to do end of support date on October 13, 2020, but it's extended now for 6 months. Because of the current situation within the world. I think we're doing this for many, many deadlines, which we're planning to do this spring, because it's kind of unfair to demand any, let's say, changes from companies and partners during this difficult time. So it makes sense to extend the timelines. So. But please move forward from SharePoint 2010 to Microsoft 365 or 2019, which is then has a much longer life cycle as well. Now, a few other things. So this is our April update from the BMP April update. A really long blog post again. So much stuff to write, actually. These are really difficult and time-consuming things to do. But again, I want to just pinpoint a lot of people who actually were involved during April on our open source efforts and contributing either in the docs or in the open source projects or doing a live demo in the community call. So a lot of people who were, again, super active from a community side. So thank you for that one. Now, related on this one, actually, we'll come back on this one slightly later. Most of this is still the dev stuff, but we, like last time in the BMP week we talked about already, we are now releasing the community docs, which is also for non-developer people. Have you, Katja, considered contributing on the, not saying that you couldn't contribute on the dev stuff, but I know that you can actually write definitely on the non-dev area as well.
I have considered it every single time when I see a documentation where there's kind of lacking something or I would like to improve it somehow. And I have even checked the guidance how to do it. There's very nice guidance how to contribute in the documentation.
Yeah.
But I haven't done anything yet.
No, not yet.
Do it. Yeah. Do it.
Yes.
Do it.
The first one is the most difficult one. And then after that, it will get easier and easier and easier. That's how it works. Moving on other topics, this one was a really interesting, a really great series starting related on Microsoft Graph. I think there will be multiple days. I can't remember, was it how many days of material?
Two weeks or a month even? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. But basically, getting started on using the Microsoft Graph Toolkit, there's a lab day one, and then there's a day two, basically how to get started and doing operations and what are the things, how do you need to do Azure AD configuration to get started on using the Microsoft Graph Toolkit. Really, really awesome stuff, making it super easy to build. Single-page applications. Like in this case, it's basically your tasks calendar. Yes, your calendar actually is being listed over there. And I think it's a one line of code.
You can see it above. Yeah, exactly. So that is like, if you wonder, like, why would you care about it? Exactly this. It's what you see on the screen with all the dates you're planning, the person, the places, the events, like all of this. In just one line of code. If that doesn't save you time, then I don't know what it is.
Yeah, and I know that there's the people, Nicola, who's actually leading the technical effort on this one, they're spending a lot of time on thinking templating, so you can actually modify how stuff are being rendered and all of that stuff. So you have a full flexibility and control then, but you basically get the data to be available and even presentation, but then you can modify the presentation if needed. And I think that's really, really cool.
And also important stuff, it saves you from doing auth.
Yes, that's true as well. Yes.
Which is the selling point.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, on other topics, PowerShell scripts prevent Power App users from accessing lists from SharePoint UI. So basically permission mapping and permission handling in the PowerShell. There's a lot of stuff what people can do. And this seems to be manipulating the role definitions, which is slightly scary, actually, to be honest, because SharePoint has a certain level of assumptions on the owner, designer, and visitor settings. And whenever we start doing unique permission masks, things work, but it might get more complicated for end users. Maybe one area where Katja has actually provided some insights for her customers as well on the permission sets. Do you have anything on comment on that one? Just out of curiosity. Does the permissions come up with the customer cases?
Not really from the intranet point of view, because it's pretty easy to control them. Yeah. But with Teams sites, of course, many times, there's always this question that can we just put this folder in read-only mode and so on.
Yeah, and typical discussions, absolutely. And you can. Technically, you can.
Yes, you can.
But it gets slightly complicated, so but it's still. This one is really good from Shao Mendes, Microsoft Graph Open Extensions, really around the how to create open extensions is what is actually being supported. And Waldeck, do you want to explain what is an open extension in a second?
Yeah, so you on the spot. Basically extension. No. So if you go up, there is the list of resources that live in a graph that you can extend with your additional things. So imagine for a calendar, you might want to attach a customer that you have, that you use as, or like account, right? Imagine that you are a media company or event company and you have a calendar and you want to attach to that a customer, right? Yeah. So a customer doesn't live in Graph, but that is your, maybe that info is coming from your LOB. So you can attach it to the calendar event. And then whenever you retrieve a calendar event, that additional info can be, or actually lives together with that event. So you no longer have like two separate entities, but you can have them as one. And with that, you can basically enrich the standard objects in Graph with additional data that makes sense in your case.
And in this case, Shawam is explaining how to extend to user and basically then have a personalized information stored in a graph based on user selection for this personal apps extension, which he has actually contributed as an open source solution as well.
Which is really, a great improvement over how we would do it in the past, because what we would do in the past with a custom user profile property that you cannot script. So it has to be, you have to go there, add it. It's going to take some time to spin up, and then you have to fill it for everybody. Whereas here, it just works immediately.
Yep.
So absolutely, it's a great. Absolutely. And also, the fact is that this is not SPO specific thing. It's all Microsoft 365 because it is Graph.
Yep. And the user identity is not just SharePoint specific. It's the cross service level. Yep. Now, really cool stuff. How to access a file while sending an email using Graph API in SharePoint framework. So that's good guidance from Shaya Kumar related on that one on the SPFX side, and kind of deep dive on all of the things, but basically including stuff on the email body. This one was from Yannick. So Yannick has been Plenovox, has been creating this Site Design Studio V2. And I think there was even a picture in the Twitter tweets, but unfortunately, Yannick, you need to remember the screen, there's no pictures in here, which reduces the let's say excitement around this feature and functionality, because people can't necessarily understand what it is and what can be done. So pictures, tell them more than 1,000 words. So remember to put them there. But basically, he's working on a Site Design Studio V2, which is then Site Design and Site Script Studio, where you can actually build easily and create stuff and then publish your site scripts to the tenant level as well, as long as you have sufficient permissions. So super cool stuff. Documentation, unfortunately, is always the last thing what people and developers are working on. But one picture. So it's always good. So you get the excitement ongoing. This one was from Rabia, web accessibility, also referred as Ally in React components. So basically, how to use area labels and area required and hidden. There's a few different attributes in the area attributes which you can actually use, and then the screen readers understand those, and then they start behaving differently on the rendering. So really cool stuff as well. And I think in certain countries, it's nowadays mandatory to have the accessibility in certain level, which is really good. So yep. I think there's an EU level requirement as well. I don't know if it's enforced or not.
I don't know, but actually, so here in the Netherlands, the government sites were required to do this to have a certain level that already for quite a few years. I think it's something like eight years or so. And imagine the fun, like trying to implement that in SharePoint 2010, 13.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, oh, and like there are like whole chunks of HTML you would have to rewrite basically to get this in place. But like you had, like if you wanted to have a public facing site, because I'm not sure, I don't think that it applies to intranets, but especially to public facing sites, this is a big requirement. And like not all of these things are trivial. Nonetheless, like they are very important, right? Because like government like is meant to serve citizens, right? And like different people are in different health shape, and they're like everybody needs to be able to consume the stuff from the government side, right? Especially now in current time. So this is very important.
Yep. Nowadays in Finland, at least, it's included in intranet as well, intranet side of the government. Okay. So I think it's a EU level
enforcement or regulation. Makes perfect sense. Now, this one was from Derek, site design for easy site page management. So basically walking through site designs and then how do we use site designs together with the definitions for site design, sorry, site pages list. I think that was the story. And then also if you need to do any complexity, you'll have to fall back on the BMP PowerShell and BMP templating, because the native site designs do not yet, for example, support modern pages. So there's no modern pages support out of the box, but the BMP templating has. But what basically this setup is doing, it is exporting the site script from the list. So you have the categorization of the site pages. So you understand which of those are actually promoted and which not. So that's pretty cool as well. Jarpas Horst had a list of errors when you might face in the SharePoint API management page. So this is basically a list of different exceptions when you are approving the permission request for SharePoint framework solutions. And what do they actually mean? Some of these are pretty cryptic. We had a joke last week where that's a correlation ID, and the correlation ID is actually encoded exception message. Or is it? You never know. how do you decode is the question.
You just know.
But basically, the whole point being on the fact that there are certain set of exceptions which might actually get on that page, and then how do you resolve them, what you should be doing, and how do you do that? So there are ways of resetting the situation on the page, on that page as well. So this, by the way, the Yannick Plenewuk's site design with a GIF animation. So how convenient. That's completely an accident now that we scroll the articles through. And this is from Joel, SPFX and modern SharePoint search page for searching the current location. So this is basically how do we use BMP modern search web parts to provide a modern experience, and how do we set those to be active on the site level. So how do I set the custom modern search pages and all of that. Now, Katja, in what are any experiences on the custom modern search pages? Have you set those up with any other?
Not yet. We have used the modern search web parts, of course, but we haven't set the custom search pages in production environment yet.
Yeah,
but it's coming. I would say that in a couple of weeks, the first ones.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And this one was working from working with cascading lists in SharePoint and Power Apps. So this one is a new article in the community docs. And where do we have the community docs? It's probably actually in the home. I need to click that. But basically a new article on how to work with cascading lists with SharePoint and Power Apps. And this is in the Microsoft 365 community docs. And this is the new location where we want to have community contributions and articles so that people learn how to contribute using GitHub. And then we actually build up this set of knowledge rather than everybody has their individual articles on their individual blog posts. So you can still publish through your blog post, but then getting it in here will mean that people can easily find it. And really important thing here as well, that obviously all of the writers and principal authors can actually target and also explicitly call them out in the articles as well. So
about this one, right? To what extent can you say that whatever is exposed here, because in the end, like, that is official Microsoft site.
Sure.
To what extent is that a signal for someone that this is vetted in a way, like this is a good way to solve a problem, as opposed to somebody on someone's blog, like I might have an opinion, but it's just an opinion. Whereas this is, you would say, so would you be able to say that this is maybe not recommended way, but a accepted way of doing things?
It's accepted way. So all of the articles are being vetted and we'll be looping the people to actually review the content which is getting published. So absolutely anything which is completely nonsense is not going to get published. And then at the same time, a lot of the stuff which is here, let's say on the SharePoint side, information architecture, site topology, a lot of this stuff is, how would I put it? It's debatable. It's not factual. It's not like this is the right or wrong, and that's whatever this is, that's wrong. No. It depends so much on the customer. So a lot of the articles are not really about factually do this. It's more on these are the set of options. If you choose this one, it has a certain implication. If you choose this one, then something else.
Right, and if this is the case, right? So I understand that there might be some things that aren't really black and white, but if there is this case where it's a gray area or it depends, do these articles explain what it depends upon?
Well, that's like, the intention. That is absolutely the intention. So, and that's kind of one of the differences comparing the classic SharePoint, classic administrative documentation which Microsoft provides. They concentrate on, this is an API, this is a PowerShell commandlet, this is how it works, this is what it sets. But it doesn't actually explain the advantages and considerations and differences and all of that stuff, the kind of the let's say the hidden knowledge of the community who works with the customers on a day-to-day basis, that have, who has probably said that or seen, if you do this, then it has following implications. So should you consider then that one as well? Well, maybe, and point it out in the article. So because Microsoft technical writers don't have that day-to-day knowledge and real-world knowledge, and they can't write that speculative, debatable documentation, if that makes sense.
It makes
sense. Things are never black and white. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We need to close up again. So spending way too much time chit-chatting things. Ilya, how to use Cypress to test your SharePoint solutions with Azure AD Secured API. So basically, testing. Ilya is the product lead for Palo Intranet. So he's basically then right now concentrating on the automation side on their side. And luckily, he's always sharing his knowledge and sharing his learnings related on the approaches, which is really cool. This one was from Sarah. Where's Sarah's full name? Sarah Haas.
All the way up. All the way up. It's the biggest text all the way up.
Yeah, it's too small. Now, here we go. Tips for getting started with SharePoint hubs. And this is the hub navigations and what's the basically the recommendations and tips and learnings from the real world cases. And this is a good example of an article which could be an article which is a living article where other people would be concentrating in the community docs, right? So having a list of things and learnings and considerations related on hubs rather than individual article in the individual's blog, which is super valuable as well. But getting that common knowledge to one single location is really, that would be so awesome if we could actually get there. We'll see. So Katja, on your case, because you spent time on the information architecture quite a lot. So the hub sites, are customers accepting this? Are they the kind of embracing the hub sites, or is it still like, no, we want to do the old way of doing stuff? Or what's the discussion related on that?
I think it's pretty simple because we don't do the old way. We don't use hub sites anymore. Yeah. So hubs are the default option. It's okay. Yeah.
Just hub it.
Just hub it. Don't hub it. And I think it's a very simple concept and easy to understand. And yes.
Yeah. And recommend that. And having the hub level navigation makes perfect sense. And then maybe having a personalization support in the hub navigation would be awesome. So you're able to target individual nodes and all of that stuff. But all of that obviously is in the roadmap. One step at a time, we'll get there.
Yes. And one thing we are waiting very eagerly is hub of hubs, because many times intranet is about a combination of multiple hubs, and then we need something to pull them together.
Which all about subsites, right?
It's sub-hubs.
Sub-hubs.
Hub of hub. It's, I think in the Ignite, we talked about it as a associated hub sites. So basically associated hubs. And then you can do hub in certain level. So anyway, and then the final article, 5 ways of accessing documents in SharePoint Online. Good article set of different ways of accessing the documents. Basically, you are always accessing the same documents regardless how you're using SharePoint site or using Teams tabs, because there's behind of the scenes, it's actually backed up with SharePoint. Maybe, let's say, I'm not saying that this would happen, I'm just speculating, if the Teams will catch fully fire, why would we even care about that there's a term called SharePoint or a planner? Because they're just capabilities of Teams, right? Or do we? I don't know. So just throwing in a statement.
What are the other two options?
So years ago, we had everything in SharePoint. We had the SharePoint portal doing tasks and comments and discussions and so on. Yeah. And then we split them to the different apps. And now we are pulling them together to Teams.
Yeah. Again. But isn't that actually, that's how the IT cycles actually work when you think about it. So we started with we're dinosaurs. We started with a mainframes and a stupid terminals, which is basically a browser accessing
punching
something.
Cards. Punching cards. We started with, we would paint on the walls. This is where it started. Like, if you really want to start dinosaurs, then...
Sure. And then there was a big meteorite and whatever. But it's one of those things where things move in cycles. So we seem to be always moving in cycles on coming back on what we did in the past as well, right?
But that is an interesting thing, because a while back, I think, I'm not sure which year it was, there was a time where Microsoft tried to replace the word SharePoint with sites. And that didn't fly well. That didn't rub well with the folks. Eventually, we are back to the product term, because the following of that is so big. There is such a big community behind that. And people are passionate, not about size. They're passionate about the product. Sure, it's size, but it's also many other things. It's pages. It's web parts. It's the different things. And boil it down to only size, like, that isn't really playing fair. Right. So I think that, like, while you might say, and I'm not sure if that's the same with Planner, right? Because it hasn't been around for that long. I'm not sure about community state around that side of things. I think for people who use it, it will probably not make a difference, because to them, it might be like, I work with a file, and whether it's stored left or right, you call it like this, that is irrelevant to me. But on the technical side, I think there will be still like this very passionate group of folks who are like, no, it's SharePoint.
but you do call Teams, even though Teams is just one application inside Teams. Sure. You have activities and calendar.
There are too many teams in Teams. Yeah. It's like talking about Teams, it's always like,
And oversimplifying things, and obviously this is just oversimplifying, not taking anything away from Teams, but Teams is just it's a shell where we kind of surface individual functionalities and applications, because it's all about what is the tab which you open, and that tab, whatever it is an its own application again. So the Teams could be considered as the shell, the operating system of the browser, so to say, where you're just pulling the information from different locations.
Yes and no, right? Because if you would think about it that way, you would say, okay, so what is the difference between SharePoint and Teams? Because SharePoint, web parts, pages, you could do exactly the same thing.
Sure.
So I wouldn't say it's exactly the same. I think that the core, like the core element, like SharePoint is pages and it's web. Teams, discussions. Like that is the core aspect of it. Like there is Teams without that.
So
that's the unique aspect of Teams.
But there is no Teams without it,
if you ask me.
Yes, there could be Teams without it. And it's just a question of what are your surface in Teams? And if you think about personal applications, a lot of the examples which we've been showing don't necessarily have chat. They're just being exposed inside of the Teams shell for easy access.
Right? Why would you then open Teams? Why not just go to the through office.com or your SweetNav applications? Like there are 20 minutes.
Why was there a digital dashboard concept already back in 98 for Outlook, which would try to surface all of the things in a single location? Why did we want to do that? I think it's an interesting thing. It's one of those, let's say, what's the right word?
Existential
questions. Everybody wants to have and own the one thing where everybody opens up in the morning and then they control that 8 hours working time by providing easy access on the relevant information. It's the promise of it's a holy grail of digital dashboard or whatever we'll call it.
Collaboration, really, or just work. No, it's not.
It's a digital work, isn't it? So everybody wants to own that. Is it Slack? Is it Teams? Whatever. Or Outlook, like a while back it was Outlook, which was intended to be the one which wasn't successful. But I think Teams is in the really truly on the direction of being successful with this. I think the momentum is definitely there. Or what's your take on that? I'm a Microsoft person, so
I think it depends a lot on your work. Like for example, me, I live half time in code. Yeah. I don't use Teams for code. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I will not have a Visual Studio Live or online
GitHub integrated on Teams.
Yeah, but I mean, like even I could browse things like issues. I could integrate that.
Sure.
Why?
Sure.
I'm a consultant. My work is documents and conversations and calls, and I live on Teams.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I can imagine. So it's very personal thing, like what depending on what kind of work you do. Yeah. And maybe at the end, it's just perfectly fine to say that it's not for everybody and it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. It's once again, it's not a black and white discussion. It's one of those things.
It depends.
No, that's the conclusion of everything. I'm a recovering consultant. It depends. Katja is a consultant, right? You're an ex-consultant as well, right, Valdi?
Yes, I used to do that. And I mean, yeah, it depends. It seems very often like the easy way out, right? Because in the end, everything depends.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, people want to have your opinion on things. Sure. And that will be very often, sure, it depends. But for your case, I would recommend this one, period.
What's actually, that's a really interesting discussion point. Sorry, taking a few minutes on this one. But Katja, what is the most difficult thing you have been forced to face as a consultant in your day-to-day work? What is the thing which is the difficult thing?
I think the difficult thing is to actually find the level where you, how much do I explain this to this customer in this situation? Yeah. How much do I say that? Just do like this, and how much I offer different opinions and different options and explained reasoning there. That's the difficult thing.
Because then quite often people get offended on, I know that. Don't stop complaining, stop explaining the basics. At least I get all the time that with my kid when I'm trying to teach him the math in the morning. Now, with the current situation, so
and many times offering to all those possible options is just confusing. You need to limit the amount of options. You need to prepare what is the best practice, best solution for you in this case.
Which is actually really interesting. But sorry, Val, like we're a really interesting point. We're looking into right now, for example, in SharePoint Sign, we're looking into reducing all of the links and complexity from the UX. Why? Because there's too many options. There's too many things. It's just confusing for people. there's so many links. If I click that one, the gear icon, there's like 25 links. I don't know what they are. And but it scares people.
But that is consequence of product that was built over years.
Sure.
One. Sure. And two, that was trying to accommodate, like to be everything to everybody.
Almost like Teams.
So in Teams, you have the thing that all of that is being hidden behind apps, right? So you have an app, and until you open that, like you won't see anything behind it. But if you think about it, like, and that is an interesting part. SharePoint for the last few years, like there are folks who compare SharePoint to Medium or Basecamp or other tools, like lightweight, single-purpose tool that haven't been around for that long. But people crave this simplicity. This very simple editing experience. I don't need to have 20 million links. Let me just enter text. And complexity of that should be hidden behind these advanced options when I need them, but not be default experience.
But now I would say, related on that one, I would say that, for example, the modern SharePoint pages, and I'm happy to have the feedback here as well, but the modern pages, and I think they're quite intuitive. The experience is much better than it was in the past.
Absolutely.
Because I'm sure there's the layouting thing is still something which
but you don't need to touch it. You can just type something and publish.
Exactly.
It's just easy. Now everything around the page that is still like, because if you open the page, it's still very heavy. There are so many different things that are needed for different things around the canvas.
True.
So yeah, but it's exactly as you say, one step at a time. You cannot just change it overnight, but it's definitely great to see SharePoint evolving from what it used to be. You know, this very server-side ASP-driven model of pages to a more agile, lean and mean model where like Canvas is clean. You can type things, you can change things, and it's easy to see. And it's not a proprietary model around it that you cannot really do anything about because everything is locked down. No, it almost invites you to put words on a page to fill it in with stuff, and it looks good by default.
I know a few PMs who love that statement, so that's good. I will pass that on.
But one concrete example of that simpleness is that previously we had 1 day content editor training for SharePoint Intranet. Nowadays it's 1.5 hours.
There's so many things to talk about. But isn't that then impacting the revenue for the work what you do? Or is it then a negative thing actually that we're making it too easy?
Because we can create more value with the same time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. I was just about to say that it probably raises the bar. Instead of trying to explain to someone the whole day how content editing works, you can think, okay, so you edit stuff here. Okay. Now here are 10 other things you can do with it.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. And I think that's the great timing to stop this discussion because we could go on and on and on. But thank you, Katja, for joining us from the middle of snow. I think after this week, thank you. Thank you for being here. And after this week, the snow should be away, probably in northern Finland as well. I think that's the forecast. We'll see. Hoping, crossing fingers that it gets warmer here as well. And thank you, Waldek, once again for being the co-host on this one. So thank you for everybody who's providing us feedback throughout the week as well. Keep the feedback coming. If there's people who would like to see us our visitors, let us know. If there are topics which we should be discussing, let us know. And please tag your articles in Twitter in hashtag.
Your content, your hobby projects, your... Yes. Everything you share and share
because
more.
We want to
start
help
more.
You to get visibility on whatever you do. But thank you, Katja, for this one. And thank you for the listeners and watchers. We'll be back within a week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.